Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Soul Seekers podcast, where we believe that hunting has the power to transform lives through primal adventure as we share our mission of mentorship is conservation. To learn more about everything we do, check out our show on Carbon TV or go to soulseekersnation.com. Freedom on, everybody, and stay soulful. If you want to take your shooting experience to the next level, then check out Coltac gear for 100% made in America products. Coltac manufactures specialty gear designed for long-range shooting, hunting, and other tactical applications. From their support bags, suppressor covers, shooting mats, and a whole lot more, Coltac is creating tough, durable, and innovative gear for both civilian and professional markets. Go to Coltac.com to see all that they have to offer. That's Coltac.com. If you are wanting to become more accurate and deadly with your shooting, one of the best things you can do is upgrade your trigger with a Timney. Timney triggers are 100% made in America and have been since their founding, providing a crisp, reliable, and repeatable trigger break every time. I'll be shooting Timney triggers in my guns this year, and I hope you'll join me in shooting the world's finest trigger. Go to TimneyTriggers.com to get yours today. If you're looking to take your hunting to another level, there's no better way to do it than by subscribing to Onyx Hunt. If you want to get better at hunting and go deeper into your scouting, Onyx is the number one GPS app for that. Join the millions of hunters who trust Onyx Hunt to find more game, discover new access, and hunt smarter. If you want to know more about Onyx, go to onyxmaps.com/hunt or download their app today for a free trial. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Soul Seekers podcast. I'm your host, Johnny Mack. Today's episode is one for all of you who get caught up in your feelings, maybe you're just not feeling it all the way, or you're not in the right mindset, or whatever you're struggling with on overcoming adversity in your life, not to be confused with overcoming adversity, which that's its own thing, but overcoming adversity and just staying in the zone to achieve goals and live your best life. Today's guest is Ryan Munsey. He is the host, or not the host, he is the author of the book, excuse my language, but Fuck Your Feelings, and we're going to be talking about how mindset can really change your trajectory of life. He was on the podcast back on episode 31 in April of 2020, so it's been 5 years, and just at that time, he was starting his journey to go west to become a Western hunter and had these big goals and all this stuff, so we're going to catch up with Ryan, hear what he's been going on, and talk about his book and his mindset, because one of the biggest things that I took away in his book was awareness creates choice. So often in life, we are oblivious to what's actually going around us in this world and how we show up in this world. And when we're oblivious, then it feels like we're victims to the circumstances in our lives. However, when we have awareness, that creates choice and we get to always choose whether we're happy, whether we're sad, whether we're successful, whether we're not. And life is ultimately just a constant game of choice. Go this way, go that way. So without further ado, the man of the hour, Ryan Munsey. How you doing, brother?
Johnny, thank you so much for having me on the show. Thanks for having me back. Dude, congratulations to you on 5 years of podcasting. What episode number is this?
So I released episode 356 this last week.
Yeah. I mean, when we first met, you were just getting this thing rolling. Yep. So I mean, that's huge. Like a big part of what we'll talk about is moving the chains, being consistent and relentless consistency. And that's like you being at episode 300 and something is a perfect example of what happens when you start something and you just keep showing up.
Yes. Just keep moving. Just keep moving. I have a lot of life experiences in between this 5 years since we last talked and a lot of different perspectives as well. So really excited to dive in. Just real quick history on yourself for all the listeners. You ended up writing a book, back in 2019? Is that when that book got released?
So I wrote it in 2017 and it came out in February of 2018.
Okay. And I got the audiobook, so I've been listening to your... Actually, no, I have the actual tangible book as well, because I like to read physically, but I pulled out your book again and started listening to it while I was going on a run, and I was like, all right, let's see what Ryan has to say. Let's revisit it, you know? And so I was hitting the pavement with a little bit of you in my ear, speaking motivationally, and just really it was like, Okay, I got to reconnect with this guy, and we got to talk about the trajectory of our paths over the last 5 years, and then how, reflecting on it and be like, did I hit what I expected to hit? Did I achieve what I expected to achieve? Do I need to pivot and, like, you know, refocus my energy and all that? So a little history on yourself. Go ahead and share with the listeners, like, how did you get into writing your book? What is it that you do day to day?
Yeah, so I'll start maybe back in 2012 is when I started my own performance training facility, a gym. And at that point, I hired a business coach, joined a mastermind, really just kind of went all in on figuring out the business side of that. I had been a personal trainer in a big box gym and just felt like, hey, I can do this better myself. And, stopped reading all the X's and O's about diet and training, and then, you know, started learning psychology and marketing and, you know, how to build websites and all the things you have to do to be a business owner. Right. And, I ran the gym from 2012 to 2016. Used to write for a lot of the all the leading online and in print fitness publications. And by the 2016, I was at a point where I was more curious, more fascinated by why people couldn't or didn't align their actions with their stated goals and values, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, general population client comes in and says, hey, I want to lose weight. Okay, roll out the red carpet. Here's the diet. Here's the training. Come into the gym. Do these, you know, and they're not able to stay on track. Yeah. Or, you know, kid comes in and says, hey, I want a college scholarship to play football. Okay, cool. Here's what we're going to do. Same thing. Diet, training, you know, here, do these things, read these books. Here's how we work on the mindset side. Here's how you become, you know, that young man that can do X, Y, Z, or young woman. We worked with a lot of softball players, and that's not to say that some didn't succeed. We had a lot of, players. We had people in the SEC in multiple sports. You know, so that was one of the cool things that I'm able to say is, you know, some of our athletes played in the SEC in football and softball. And, so I had this, I was really able to see what made some people successful and others not.
Yeah.
Right. And I became very fascinated with, like I said, why people's actions don't align with what they tell you they want out of life. And I didn't care anymore about writing diets or training programs. Like, I mean, I can still do that, yeah, but it doesn't matter. Right. What matters is what you're going to do. And, you know, as you said in the intro, like the choices that you make every single day, you know, if you're not going to bed early enough, or if you're not getting enough sleep, if you're not getting up in the morning, you know, your alarm clock goes off and you're supposed to go get that workout in, like, you know, and you don't do it, it doesn't matter what the program is.
Yeah.
So, I moved into doing that kind of work and, had just some unique opportunities that fell into place where I was able to work with, at the same time, kind of the, what I would call the lab coats, the academics, and get the theory of neuroscience and performance. And at the same time, work with, you know, these athletes and athletes at higher levels, Olympic and professional levels and special forces operators and business leaders. And, mm-hmm. and I called that, like, that's the application. And so marrying the theory and the application, and then, you know, the first book, Fuck Your Feelings, was an attempt to provide a user's manual for other people who wanted more out of their lives, for people who want to, you know, pursue the highest expression of themselves in whatever that might be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wanted it to be a timeless resource. And so when people say what you said, that, you know, they're coming back to it, they're reading it again, you know, that just warms my heart because it means that it's doing that. And it's been very successful. I've been very fortunate. And over the last 8 years since that's come out, it's crazy to say that it's been 8 years since the book came out. I've been able to do a lot of keynote speaking, workshops, working with, again, that same core demographic, a lot of first responders, military, fire, police, as well as, you know, business leaders, entrepreneurs, athletes. My message tends to resonate really well with people in high consequence environments.
Mm. Yeah.
At, I say it that way intentionally because I think in a lot of, and this is nothing against the corporate world, but there's a lot of leeway in that space where people can say, oh, well, we're going to get to that in Q3 or, you know, next year we'll roll that out, whatever. Yeah. And, you know, if you're on the front lines, it's life or death. You can't wait 3 weeks. It's kind of like the New Year's resolution, right? If something's got to change, we're changing it now. We're not waiting until January 1st to say, all right, now we'll change it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting hearing you say this and really just diving into the human psychology. I absolutely love psychology. And I wish I would have loved it back when I was 18 years old, having to take psychology 101 courses in college. But ultimately, it's led me to where I am now. And as an adult, as a father of three young boys, as a husband to my wife, and a business owner myself, a public school teacher, I reflect on my past and I realize how much, and specifically public education, sets us up for failure because it's not asking us this one question. What do you want? Right? And your feelings, it's so interesting that your book is titled what it is, because since moving from the state of Washington, when you and I connected 5 years ago, I've moved to Texas, relocated because of COVID, and identified what it is that I want for myself, for my children, for my marriage, for our future. And then at the same time, you know, everything ultimately, we're making that choice, yes or no. Is what I want worth sacrificing what I have? Right? Mm-hmm. Is getting more fit in my life worth waking up early and getting that workout in? Or do I not really want to trade sleeping a little bit more and the comfort of my bed? Since teaching in the state of Washington, I've come down and I've started working in a alternative education system, which is all disciplinary. And we teach specifically that our experiences from ages 2 to 6, now this is human psychology more, and we'll get into like the adult side of it, but our perception of the world is filtered through our experiences of mostly ages 2 to 6, and those create our thoughts, which lead to our feelings, which lead to actions and consequences. The thing is that people don't realize is that your thoughts aren't always true. And if we always treat our thoughts as they're true, then we're always going to feel based off of what we're thinking. And that is the problem. And that's the premise and the title of your book is screw your feelings. Like, right. Let's get down to the what, right?
Yep. Yeah, there's a great analogy of a horse and a rider, right? And in this analogy, the horse is your limbic system. Primarily the amygdala is where feelings are rooted. But this section of our brain is, I also think of this when I'm explaining the limbic system and the prefrontal cortex, I think of the limbic system as like, we're the same age. So we grew up with the cartoons of the devil on one shoulder and the angel on the other, right? Yep. And so this isn't to say that the limbic system is all bad, right? It has survived evolution for a reason. It keeps us alive. If you and I are walking down a trail, getting ready to go pick up the rest of your elk and pack it out, and you're just ecstatic because you just killed that bull that's behind you. That is a beautiful bull behind you, by the way.
Thank you.
But if we're going back to make, you know, our second pack out trip with that thing, and you're not paying attention, and there's a snake, you know, right in the middle of the trail, 6 feet in front of you. When I see that snake, I do this when I speak all the time. I get people to tell me like, hey, what are you going to do? Right. And 9 times out of 10, people get it right on the first time. But the answer I'm looking for is you do the Frank Costanza, the stop short, right? Your arm goes out first. Mm-hmm. Then the language piece comes in and says, you know, Johnny, stop, or, you know, hey, there's a snake, stop. Right. But the arm shooting out first is always going to be our first reaction. That's the limbic system. It is faster than the prefrontal cortex, which is where language is based. And it's designed that way for a reason. That's what keeps us alive, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's a couple of things to note here that are critically important. One is that will always happen. You will always have a limbic response first. Then you will always have a secondary response that is more logical, more rational, one that is rooted in the prefrontal cortex. So maybe it's seeing an attractive individual and you have a thought, and then you have a second thought that's like, oh, well, maybe I should be a decent human being. Or you smell cookies or you see pizza and you're like, oh man, that looks amazing. Oh, but I'm on a diet. Oh, I don't eat gluten, whatever, right? Yeah. And so when people don't go, this ties into your point at the top about awareness. When we're not aware that that's how we're wired and that's how our brain works, we think, like, we assign guilt and shame for having the first thought first, right? Yeah. What's wrong with me? Why do I always do this? Well, there's nothing wrong with you. Like, that's your neurobiology. Like, that's how you're wired. You're always going to have the first thought first.
Yeah.
To your point, we don't have to act on that thought. So let me bring this all the way back to limbic system, prefrontal cortex. That explains the speed of the limbic system. So the other part that we have to understand is that is sometimes it's called the reptilian brain, the lizard brain. It is incapable of seeing beyond the now. It's like the ego-driven teenager or the devil on one shoulder. On the other shoulder, we have the angel, the wise old sage, the prefrontal cortex. It's also called the neocortex. It's more recently evolved. It is capable of abstract thought, concepts and constructs like gods and deities. It's where language is rooted. And because of its deep thinking abilities, it's a little bit slower. So again, that's why you have the first thought first from the limbic system. And so if we bring all this back to the horse and the horse is the limbic system, the rider is the prefrontal cortex. We want the rider telling the horse where to go and how fast to go. We don't want the horse dictating direction and pace. And so this whole thing is about awareness and self-regulation, self-management, self-leadership, by being aware of how you're wired and then having the awareness affording you the choice to say, hey, do I want to continue down this path that I've been on, or do I want to do things in a way that is more aligned with my goals and my values?
Right. And why, from my perspective, because I've dealt with a lot of public, right, mostly in their youth, but I've dealt with a lot of parents and people as adults, I feel like the majority of human beings actually are not aware at all of what they do. Like just their NPC character is just like, here we go. This is what we do. And do you know what I'm talking about?
I do. That's why I'm laughing. And it's sad. But, you know, to your point, I guess we blame the education system. I mean, there are certainly never... No one ever taught me this in school.
Yep.
I mean, everything I know in this realm, like, you know, I took psychology in college and I loved it. It was fun, but it was, you know, 101, you learn Maslow's hierarchy of needs, but I didn't learn this. In all honesty or in all fairness, I may not have latched onto it or paid attention, but I don't think the education system teaches us these things. And that's why I wanted the book to be a user's manual, because by the time you pick this book up, you're 25, 30, 35 years old,
right?
And you're just now getting a user's manual for like what it means to be human and how you're wired and how it works. And unless a person seeks that information out on their own, it's not information that is given to us. And so you're right. I would say most people end up walking through life in a fog or sleepwalking, or you could go as far as to look at like the analogy in the Matrix movie.
Right? Oh yeah. And I love that. I think that's spot on. Yeah. It's really interesting. Like, the biggest aha moment for me in my life was when I took I invested in myself. And that was one thing. Like, you got to understand that us as human beings, I'm still talking to the listeners right here, you are worth it. You are worth investing in yourself. And instead of spending money on all these other things that come and go as you please, invest it into yourself. And so I ended up spending a lot of money to take a emotional intelligence leadership course. It was multiple weeks. I had to fly all the way down to San Diego multiple times, and it's very experiential. And this is one of the things that I love, because experiences create perspective. right? As little kids grow up and they're in their homes and they look at their mom and dad, regardless of how good of a parent their mom and dad is, what is it that kids always say? You're the best mom. You're the best dad. Yeah. Why? Because they don't have perspective on whether or not their mom and dad are truly doing their best job for them. Now, this is not shade to be thrown on parents across America, but it is something for people to reflect on, because inward reflection leads toward to outward correction. And so when we think upon our ways and we're like, okay, this is all I know, so I'm going to call it good. But the best part of the sunny day is when it's not sunny and it's the dark of night. And then it's like, oh, we've come to appreciate the sunshine that much more. So the experiences create perspectives. What we're talking about, and I wouldn't necessarily, I mean, I want to put a lot of blame on public education, but ultimately, as parents, we need to teach our children to be free thinkers and to constantly ask why and to challenge the narrative, because that is what allows us to have complete understanding, dive deeper into our thoughts, which then create the feelings.
Yeah, that's really well said. And then again, I'm not trying to kick the education system, but I think a big part of that failure is that we're not taught how to think critically. In
totally.
Education,
dude, you can kick it all you want, because I'm a part of it.
I think your answer is great too. I think, you know, we don't have kids, so I don't tend to look at things through the lens of like parenting. But to your point, as a parent, if I was a father, if I had a kid, I would make damn sure that my son or daughter was thinking critically, that they had those skills, that they were questioning things. I would not wait for the public school system to teach them that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's super interesting when you start having kids. And if you're a fan of psychology, dude, my brother and I had this talk. I was like, man, what if we just told our kids, like, the sky is purple forever? Like, no, the sky's purple, but I always hear it's blue. Yeah, that's purple. You know, like the psychology you have with these beautiful little sponges.
I'm curious, what emotional intelligence leadership course did you take? Was it through EQI 2.0?
ALA, Ascension Leadership Academy.
Okay.
And we'll have to talk a little bit more about this. I will say it was 100% life. Like, it changed the trajectory of how I operate.
I can totally understand that. So I've got a colleague, his name is Hassan Kamel. He's Egyptian. And when we speak and teach together, he always makes jokes about, you know, being the brown guy or the Arab. He's a riot. So anyway, he is really extremely well-versed in emotional intelligence. And he reached out to me because he read my book, and there's so much overlap in what we do. That we put together an emotional resilience program for first responders. And we teach this to fire departments, police departments. We do it with military groups, and we've, you know, done quite a few around the country. It's post-certified in a couple of different states. But that's why I ask, because I know the overlap is there. I know how it ties into leadership. And because of what we've done, I know that EQ model through EQI 2.0 and all that. Yeah. Personal curiosity.
I love it. I love it. Well, ultimately, like, what we teach, and I'm speaking specifically to in my discipline campus towards these kids, because a lot of these kids come in, and I'm talking kids, but all the listeners, hear what I'm saying and evaluate your own life at this. Like, put yourself from a perspective of being like, okay, how am I measuring up? Because you either have a victim mindset, which also is an excuse to stay the same, or you have a growth mindset, which is a reason to change. And your reason to change, if you want to grow, improve, accomplish things that you've never accomplished before, if you want that bad enough, your reason to change has to be greater than your excuse to stay the same. And I find that so fascinating, because ultimately it's like, what are people willing to trade in order to get what they want to accomplish, right? Like, you want that elk, you want that mule deer, you want that great physique, you want that wonderful marriage. What are you willing to trade in order to accomplish that?
Yeah. And I think this is why so many folks gravitate towards, you know, the slogans or, you know, maybe not even just a slogan, but just the thought of like slump, comfort being a slow death. Right. And so I've always said comfort is the enemy of motivation. And, you know, I think it ties in with what you're saying, where you have to be more uncomfortable mm-hmm. with your current situation than whatever the change or, you know, like the reason folks are change averse is that it's uncomfortable. So your level of discomfort with your status quo has to be larger than that, whatever that perceived discomfort of making a change is.
Right.
And so if you're comfortable, you're not going to make a change. You have to get uncomfortable or your level of frustration or fed up or whatever those things are, that has to exceed the barrier to change.
Yeah. And the interesting thing that goes along with that is like, I've battled with weight since, so I was a college athlete. I played multiple sports in college, always had to eat a lot, always lifting weights, you know, staying active. And then as you get older and having multiple kids and a lot of different, you know, side hustles and all this, fitness is still a priority, but the nutrition you kind of forget about, at least in my world. And it's like, oh man, I love sugar. Makes me feel good. I have a lot of emotional trauma in my life that I'm a comfort eater. You know, when things get tough, it's really easy to turn to the pantry and be like, oh, just a little bit here, a little bit there, you know. And then all of a sudden, you're puffy, you're swollen, you're feeling gross, you're not living your best. And then it's easy to make an excuse once you start backsliding and be like, okay, well, just this one more. And ultimately you're like, wow, I'm really far away from where I want to be or where I was. And you on your book, you mentioned, and I don't know if it was you or you were quoting somebody else, but the whole idea of like, if you don't want to have even the option to be tempted to eat it, then don't buy it in the first place.
Yeah. So it's funny. That's actually what was going through my head when you were saying, going to the pantry and reaching in. I'm like, Johnny, you lose the minute it's in the pantry. Actually, you lose the minute it goes in the grocery, the buggy or the basket or cart at the grocery store. And so this first kind of hit me when I had the gym. I started telling people, you can't eat what you don't have. And I love that phrasing because it goes both ways. Like if your diet plan or meal plan, whatever you want to call it, calls for ribeyes or chicken breasts or whatever, you're not going to nail that meal if you don't first go to the store and acquire the thing and then have it in your home in order to be able to cook it. Right. But it also works for the Oreos. And so, I won't say this lady's name, but we had this awesome member in our gym. She really was. I'm not making that up. She was awesome. In the odd chance that she or somebody hears this. That's not to say you don't have a big listener base, Johnny. I just don't know that she still listens to a podcast that I'm on. But she had this problem where she would eat like the entire thing of Oreos. And I mean, she was killing it in the gym. Like her PRs would go up every single month. Like, I mean, she was getting so strong, but she wasn't losing weight and she didn't like how kind of thick she was getting. And I'm like, she's like, well, I'm not losing weight. And so we're starting to have these conversations mm-hmm. and find out she's eating entire boxes of Oreos. And I'm like,
get you every time.
Tell me, like, so here's what I know about her. I know she's single. She doesn't have kids. Like she lives by herself. I'm like, how are these things getting in your house? Like, I know it's a little different when you have three kids. You're going to buy things for them, you know, that maybe they're going to eat that you won't. And so your reality and her reality might be a little bit different. But when you're single, if you're the only person in the house and you buy it, the moment you buy it, you're eventually going to eat it. I don't care how much willpower you have. It's going to be in your house and you're going to eat it. So right. You don't lose the moment that you lose willpower. You don't lose the moment that you go to the pantry because you're bored.
It's all a choice.
It's a choice. You chose to buy it. That's when it happened. And so, you know, even in like choice architecture of life, like the advice has always been, I don't know if you've heard this, but it was common years ago. You know, when you go to the grocery store, you should go right after you've been at the gym, right? Because you've just put in all that work, you've done the effort, like you're highly aligned and motivated. You're less inclined to buy the foods that you're trying to avoid. Mm-hmm. You know, so if somebody listening struggles, you know, with that battle at the grocery store, don't go when you're starving. Go right after you've done a big hike, or
totally,
you know, when you're in a headspace where you're connected to, you know, your goals and your values.
Well, and that's so huge. I used to work in a grocery store for multiple years, and I saw that firsthand all the time. Just, you know, you watch, you we need to be objective observers of this world. And when you can stand at the end of a checkout counter and look at the customer and the body shape that goes with it, and then look at what they're buying, I saw firsthand, like, this makes sense. This makes sense over and over and over. Like, the saying you are what you eat is 100% true. Of like, you eat crap, you'll feel like crap. You're not probably going to look like crap, right? But if you eat living food or something that was actually alive and not processed, then you're going to be thriving and growing in your own life, rather than, you know, in with the dead, out with the dead, in with the living, out with the living.
Yeah. And I think fundamentally everybody who listens to your podcast agrees with that, whether they realize it or not, because I mean, I'm pretty sure everybody hunts and right, does it at least to some degree to procure what we think is the world's healthiest meat, right? Whether that's, you know, an elk or an antelope or deer or whatever it is, but you're actively seeking out organic, wild procured, free range, yeah, grass fed meat. And you know, it's the best meat that you're going to eat all year. And to your point, Johnny, I mean, we are literally made out of what we eat. Your cells turn over depending on where they are in the body every few weeks to few months. And like, the new cells are made out of the foods that you eat. Yeah. So you are either made out of McDonald's French fries or Doritos chips or elk. And I mean, I want to be made out of badass elk.
Right. That are just, yeah, dominating the mountain and having a great, yeah, time. I totally, yeah, agree. You know, what's really interesting is the more I've gotten into the nutrition side of things, which, you know, this stems back to the psychology of human beings, right? Like, our experiences of our youth set us up for the patterns of our adult life. Right. We have created habits without even intentionally realizing we're creating habits.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you dove into like fasting for extended periods of time, or like a water, doing only water, or just straight nothing?
Well, by dive in, do you mean have I done them or am I familiar with them?
Either or, yeah, great question.
So, I mean, my degree is food science and human nutrition. I can talk to you about food science and human nutrition for 3 hours if you wanted to. I also spent a lot of time in that biohacking space, so I know a lot of the folks and brands and companies. And I have done almost every version personally of warrior diet or intermittent fasting, bulletproof fasting. I have tried a lot of them. I will tell you that from my personal experience, there's like this unholy triumvirate of fasting, low carb diet, and high intensity training that, you know, if you're doing all three of those at once, wrecked my hormones. And I've seen the evidence that it does that for others as well. And so in, I guess it was like 2020 maybe, is when, like, right around the first time we got connected, I had recently, so I think as far as like, I think 2019 to 20 was when I had stopped practicing any kind of fasting. But I think from maybe 2000, I don't know, there's probably a 5 or 6 year period there where I was intermittent fasting in some form or fashion all the way through there. I don't do it anymore because of those hormonal impact reasons. I'm a meathead. I want to train hard. I'm not going to give that up. Generally speaking, I follow a low carb diet. There are times where I haven't, but I think from a health reason, health perspective, we want to burn as little sugar as possible throughout our lifespan. And, you know, if you're training hard and you're intermittent fasting and eating a low carb diet, you got to really watch your blood work.
Interesting. Interesting.
But it, you know, you mentioned that in a way that you like, maybe you have some questions on water fasting or
Yeah. You know, you just hear and see on social media nowadays, cause so much stuff gets pushed out. It's not like social media was 5 years ago where it's like, oh, look at this picture. Oh, that's nice. You know, look at this picture. There's so much different dialogue going on that it's like, okay, well, what is real? What is successful? And I'm also a huge proponent of actually trying things or experiencing things that are difficult. Right? Like, how hard is hard? I think back when you and I were podcasting, I was probably a couple weeks out from a 100-mile ultra marathon, you know, and that got canceled because of COVID, unfortunately. So the furthest I ever ran leading up to that was 40 miles, which is still ultra, but not that 100 miler that I wanted.
Right.
And so I was just, you know, understanding like, what is hard, right? Like, We say things are hard, like, oh man, that was the hardest thing I've ever done. But is it? Like how hard is going without food for 3 days or going out food and water for 3 days? Or, you know, like really saying, I want to focus, having intent and saying, I want to get this out of my experience.
Yeah, so I think the idea of pushing your boundaries is a great concept. Like, if you want to keep it here with hard, right? So every time you find a new hard, you're expanding your boundaries. And if you want to visualize that as a sphere or a circle, that's fine. But here's why that's such a valuable practice, because everything that you want to achieve or do or become that you are not currently is outside of your current capacity, right? If you want to make more money, if you want to have a bigger podcast audience, if you want to kill bigger bulls, if you want to spend more days hunting, you know, every single year, those are all things that are outside of your current abilities or capacities. The only way to get there, to have them be inside of your capacities, is to expand your boundaries. You have to be more capable. You have to be smarter. You have to be more effective or more efficient or more productive or whatever. So if you're not pushing your boundaries, you're never going to grow. And so I think your question there and your example of finding your next hardest thing, your new level of hard, is not the best word, because that implies that it's not a good thing. It's a great practice because it's a specific example of pushing your boundaries. So, you know, go back to food as the example. Like, if you were to go 3 days without food, now the next time you go 3 hours without a meal or 4 hours without a meal, you're like, oh, well, I mean, I can go 3 days. What's an extra hour, right? Like, it's fine. And so maybe that's not the first step. Maybe you go a day, then a day and a half, then 2 days, whatever. But, you know, take those baby steps. And in any of those areas, whether it's, you know, diet or a run, right? Like, you didn't go out and just say, hey, I'm going to go for a 40-mile run. You worked up to it, right?
Right.
But the first time you went for a 10-mile run, like, if that was the longest run you'd ever done, you're like, oh, wow, that was hard. I can't imagine what it would be like to run 25 miles at a time. Mm-hmm. But then when you ran 25, you're like, dude, 10's a piece of cake. When you're running 40 at a clip, 30's fine. Or a 15-mile day in the Elk Woods in September is like, it's fine.
Yeah. It's so true. I really like that. In the leadership course that we talked about just stretching our plate. You said a sphere or circle, whatever. We talked about a dinner plate. Like, how much can you actually fit on your plate?
Yeah.
And just call it stretching, right? Like, you just need to stretch more.
Exactly.
Just expand those boundaries. I like that. I really like that. Well, let's before we shift gears into like your hunting story, because I want to catch up on that. Is there anything that you feel like we need to hit that, you know, because we've kind of covered quite a few different things from your book and just the psychology of human nature and all that. Anything you feel like, we need to make sure we hit this before we move on?
I think we covered a lot. As we go through some of the hunting stories, I'll see if I can find some examples of some other stuff, you know, on the psychology side and kind of highlight those. I I've been really fortunate. One of the guys that I've hunted a lot with over the last few years is somebody that is well known in the bow hunting space and is known for mindset. So I'll maybe share a couple of things I've learned from him or examples that he's demonstrated when we've been in the woods.
Yeah, I'd love that. So for all the listeners, back when I recorded this very first episode with Ryan, he had not gone elk hunting out west yet. At least if my memory serves me, you had like this, I'm planning on going out west and doing this. Am I correct?
I think that's a little off. I did my first elk hunt in November of 2019.
Okay, so it was fresh then.
I think when we first recorded, I had gone out there and I got my ass kicked. Like, I have no problem telling people I was totally unprepared. So the guy when we recorded before, it was with a friend, Mike Lum. And so Mike was the guy that we got connected on social media maybe a year and a half prior. And it was totally unrelated. Mm-hmm. And while we're on the phone, he's like, hey, he had told me what he did. He's a fly fishing guide in the Madison Valley in Montana. And he's like, hey, if you ever want to come out here and go fly fishing or go elk hunting, let me know. And as soon as he finished the sentence, I was like, I'm just going to let you know right now. Yeah, I want to do that. Let's set up this next call. And so that ended up being, I got an elk tag in 2019. And he was like, I know you bow hunt, but let's do it with rifle just for your first time and, increase your odds of being successful. And I went out there and I got my ass kicked. I was not physically prepared. I mean, I'm grew up in Virginia. I spent my early childhood and like early hunting was, sitting here waiting on a deer, hoping one walks by. And so the elevation, the terrain, it wasn't so much the miles as it was the incline, right? The elevation gain and loss. And the speed. I mean, Mike and some of these guys that I hunt with are just like, they just fly through the mountains. And so despite the fact that it kicked me in the face, I loved it. I loved it's the same thing that everybody listening to this show loves. You love the adventure, the challenge, the wide open spaces, the natural landscapes. It's beautiful. Like, I'm stopping and taking pictures, still do. Like, I'm out there every time I come around a corner, you crest a ridge, you're like, holy shit, are you seeing this? And
yeah,
just taking pictures. And I loved everything about it. And so I think when we first recorded, I was at that point where I was like, never again is my physical fitness going to limit me on a hunt. And more importantly, never again will it limit my hunting partner. Because there were times where, like, I thought he was worried about, like, well, how deep should we go? Because I don't know if he can get back out.
Totally. And
I don't want my hunting partners ever worrying about that. Like, I want to be the guy that they can count on. And they're like, oh, Muncie's with me. We're going deep. Or I can kill one 20 miles back. He'll figure out how to get it out. Like,
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. And that makes a great hunting partner, by the way. So when you can hold your own and you don't have to pick up the slack for everyone else around you. Yeah. Okay. So you did that hunt. You learned a lot. What has your hunting journey been like since? And have you gotten your redemption out in the woods?
I have killed several elk. We'll just cut right to the chase. Spoiler alert there. I should have built a little tension for you. Sorry. Mike and I are still really good friends. We talk all the time. I've been hunting with him a few times. As a non-resident in all the states that have elk, I kind of have to play the game and I'm constantly, rotating where I go. So I've got a buddy who has been a resident in Colorado. He was in the military. So for a while he had dual residency in Oregon as well. So I've gone twice, actually this past year, twice to Oregon. Year prior, I was in Montana again with Mike. 23, I know I'm going backwards. 23, my buddy and I went to Utah. We both got non-resident general tags. We doubled up on bulls on a general unit tag in Utah, which was phenomenal. 22 and 21, actually 20, 21 and 22, I was in Montana for all of those. And I was really fortunate. I got to hunt not only with Mike, but because of where he lives, he had a connection to Brian Barney. And Brian actually helped build Mike's first house. They live in the same small town of Guinness. So I've been able to spend quite a few times, weeks in the woods with Brian, and learned so much from Mike and from Brian. And there's another guy out there that hunts with them, who's a guide. That really accelerated my learning curve.
Yeah.
And I got to learn so much from those guys. It's been a blast. And to be a part of some of their kills as well. I don't know how closely you follow Brian, but it was 2020.
He's a slayer.
It was either 21 or 22. We were out there during archery season, and they got hit with a massive blizzard. Mm-hmm. So if you've ever seen his snow bull with a bow, I was with him that day and helped him pack that thing out. And I mean, that was such a cool experience. It's the elk hunting journey has been amazing, and not just the hunts themselves, but, you know, I think to your point, about the challenge and who you have to become. Right. Yeah. And so I said, I want to be that guy that my hunting partners can count on. And so, you know, I've changed the way I train. From that 2019 experience through, you know, 20 and 21, I completely overhauled the way I train, less of a bodybuilder and more, you know, miles, more aerobic capacity, runs and rucks. And the one of the things that is like the most crazy that I did was I bought a water pump cover on Amazon for like $20, mm-hmm. just like a plastic box. And my Saturday workout for probably 2 or 3 years was I'd go run a mile to warm up, and then I would put that box, I had to just have it in my basement. I would sit in my basement and I would do an hour of step ups on that box with, you know, 50 pound pack on my back. And it is the hardest mental workout that you can imagine doing, because you're just doing step ups in place for an hour, staring at insulation in your basement. And I'm like, if I can do this, there's no climb that I can't do, right? At least you have a view. And that's been true. I mean, I've been places and done climbs and, places that, when I take my friends or, you know, go with other people, like, it's a piece of cake for me because I've done the work and I've prepared for it. And I think that's the thing I love the most about hunting is the challenges and who you have to become in order to be successful. And it's not just the physical side, it's the mental side, it's the survival and the field craft and all those things that make you a more capable, more aware human.
Yeah. Oh man, I love that. When it comes to the mental side of things, how much are you a believer in like manifesting and speaking things into existence?
You know what? Because I like you, Johnny, you guys, your audience is going to get a sneak preview. So before we hit record, I told Johnny, my second book has been turned into the publisher. The manuscript was turned in like 3 weeks ago. There is a story in the book from Brian. And so 1 year he drew his Montana moose tag a couple mm-hmm. years ago. And I had an elk tag in my pocket and he had his moose tag and he was, you know, chasing moose. And he was kind of struggling with finding the moose that he wanted to kill. And he's like, you know, it's the same, like all hunters kind of have this. Like if you've got an elk tag in your pocket, all you see are moose. If you've got a moose tag, all you see are, you know, 350 inch bull elk.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
It's right. And so he starts like jokingly saying, I'm the world's worst moose hunter. Right. Cause he's like, I go out looking for moose and I can't find them. And all I see are elk, whatever. And, you know, Brian is really a fan of the mental game. Mm-hmm. He loves this stuff. And he told me, he's like, dude, I caught myself after about a week saying that. And I was like, I started believing it. And then I started acting in that way. This goes back to what you're saying about identity and beliefs. And and they shape our patterns, right? And vice versa. Mm-hmm. That's why it's so important to pay constant attention to your internal dialogue and the language that we use. And, you know, it started as a joke, and then it started to get repeated, and then it started to impact his actions, right? And that's where it gets super, negative or detrimental.
Yeah.
And so fortunately, he has awareness of this, and he was able to catch himself. And he's like, man, I just stopped saying that. I went back to my mantra that I use. And if you hear Brian, you know, he always says this with, you know, patience kills the bull, right? Or patience kills the buck if he's chasing mule deer. And, you know, that's from a just pure hunting perspective. Like, that is such a valuable lesson. Patience kills the bull. That is something I have seen him use and use effectively time and time again. And when I've done that, it's been effective and helped me be successful, successful as well. So, yeah. But he said, you know, hey, I caught myself saying the negative thing. I switched it to the thing that I know works. I said, hey, patience kills the bull. Just keep creating opportunities for yourself. Keep putting yourself in the right spot. Keep going where you know you need to go. Just stay in the game. Keep doing what you're doing or what you know you need to do. Mm-hmm. And like a week later, he's sending me a picture of, you know, he got it. Like he's in the rifle season, you know, so he's got his orange bib on with his bow in his hand, and he's like, but he got his bull moose. And so, that story, there's an abbreviated story of that in the book, but I think that's a great example, of a story that illustrates your question.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting because I see the youth of America all the time, you know, oh, I'm stupid. I'm no good. I can't. I'll never, I'm not, you know, it's negative, negative, negative. It's like, you're limiting beliefs. You are already saying to yourself, I'm not good enough, nor am I worthy enough to achieve the greatness in which I can dream in my mind.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. And that's a big part of, like, the new book is split into two parts. And part one is the mindset makeover. Part two is a system. And in the mindset makeover, it explains a lot of this in detail. We talk about patterning, talk about identity, language, standards, commitment. All of that's in the beginning because we've got to have that part of the mindset in place. If you don't have that, no system is going to work.
Totally. So, well, you know, I can single-handedly count the number of life-transforming experiences I've had in my entire life. And it's two. One, when I chose myself to go to a leadership conference in emotional intelligence, that transformed me. The second is when I chose myself to say, I want to become a hunter. And what I learned from identifying these two hallmark moments in my life is that what it is I chose myself. Right? Like when we're on an airline and say, oh, we're about to hit turbulence and oxygen mask, you're going to fall from the sky, the ceiling. Make sure to put yours on first before you worry about other people. You got to take care of yourself.
Yeah. And it's a weird thing because for a lot of people, it feels or sounds, seems selfish, but you can't pour from an empty cup. You can't give what you don't have. And, you know, if you want to show up for others, if you want to be there for others, you have to have something to give. You have to have some capacity or abilities. And if you haven't invested in yourself first, if you haven't done the work to be of some value or to be an asset, like you're, what are you bringing to the table? What are you, like, you can't help. Right. And so, you have to put your mask on first in order to be able to help others.
Totally. Ryan, I've really enjoyed our time together, brother. We need to go on a hunt together.
We do, man.
Let's figure out a way to do that.
And yeah. Put me on an elk like that one behind you.
Dude, that was,
I hate to keep bringing it up, but like, I'm looking at you and it's right there. I can't not see it.
I know. I'm trying to figure out what's
best. Where was that one?
That is Western Washington.
That's a nice boy.
Yeah, that was my very first time archery hunting.
Dude, you're ruined.
Well, totally. However, I will say this because this goes into the manifestation and speaking things into existence. So the year that I shot that, which I think that might have been 2019 or it might have been 20, That was like 2019, I'm pretty sure. So that was the year that I became familiar with Born and Raised Outdoors and their elk hunting series, Land of the Free. Okay. And so I was running on a treadmill in my garage, had a TV in the garage, and I'd turn on YouTube, and I was watching in January, February, whenever they released Land of the Free series, these episodes, and I was day by day just tracking it. And I'm like, dude, elk hunting, this is sweet. Yeah, okay, okay. I'm going to buy a bow. So I scheduled myself to go buy a bow, and I was only, this must have been 2018, 19, whenever that was, but I only killed my first big game animal, which was a black bear, a year or two prior. Like, this me learning how to hunt and then the explosion of growth happened was substantial. So I'm on the treadmill, and I'm like, dude, I'm going elk hunting this year. I don't know how to do it. It doesn't matter. We don't worry about the how. We worry about the what. What do I want? I want a big elk. And so I started saying to myself out loud, I'm shooting a 6x6 elk, shooting a 6x6 symmetrical bull elk. And yeah, I wasn't worried about how this was going to end up. It's just like, that's what I'm focusing on. Mm-hmm. Sure enough, that September, I ended up shooting that bad boy.
Dude, I love it. And that is awesome.
And I think that goes, I know, because our words matter. I know that that goes in alignment with our affirmations that we speak about ourselves, right? Like, I am loved, I'm worthy, I'm good enough, I'm, healthy, I'm wealthy, I am a successful hunter, I will shoot this animal. And, doesn't mean it happens on our timing, but it does mean that if that's what you want, you're going to be able to go get that. You just got to be willing to sacrifice or trade what it's going to take to get there and achieve it.
Yep, absolutely. Well, congrats on that one. And yeah, let's find a way to go on a hunt together, man. That'd be great.
Absolutely. Brother, where can people find your book?
So my website is ryanmunsey.com. That's sort of the hub of all the operations. You can find the book there. It's also on Audible. I will read it to you while you train for the elk hunts or bear hunts or whatever hunt you want to do. Or if you like the physical copy, you can get it on either my website or Amazon.
I love it. Man, thanks for coming on and sharing your knowledge, your experience, and your perspective. Really, it means a lot.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on. And I agree, man, we got to do this more often. Let's don't let 5 years go by before we chat again.
Right. Absolutely. Well, guys, if you enjoyed listening to this episode, please give it a thumbs up, leave a comment, a rating, a review, share it with somebody else. Remember that inward reflection leads outward correction. So the stuff that we're talking about on this episode, chew on it. Think about it. See how it could apply to your life and how it could make your life better, right? Because everything's a choice. Either you have a reason to change or you have an excuse to stay the same, and your reason to change needs to be greater than that excuse. Remember that hunting has the power to transform lives through primal adventure, and that you can never outgive good as mentorship as conservation. For Ryan Munsey and Johnny Mack here at Soul Seekers, be blessed, F your feelings, and remember that hunting has the power to transform lives through primal adventure. Be blessed. Stay soulful. Later, y'all. If you enjoyed today's podcast and want to support the show, you can always like, share, subscribe, and leave a rating, as it helps us share our mission of mentorship is conservation. Thank you so much for tuning in and being a part of Soul Seekers Nation as we transform lives through primal adventure.